Muslims do this so that they can control their own indigenous population and at the same time marginalize Muslims in the West so that they're not able to voice their pain and grief. Because as soon as they do, they can be portrayed as extremists or whatever. So the issue of Islamophobia is a continuous situation in the West. It is, new laws are being passed in UK, as you well know, that may take the nationality away of potentially 6 million Muslims or others who are living in UK who may be deemed to be extremist. And then there are other laws which are being passed or under discussion, the police laws, whereby anyone talking about their rights may be deemed to be extremist. And, you know, whether they go on demonstrations or even in cyberspace, if they write anything, they could be picked up and prosecuted for that. So there are significant challenges that are facing the Muslim community living in the West. But really, at the end of the day, it all stems, if you like, from the Islamic Revolution, because Islamic Revolution has given a voice to the Muslims in a way which wasn't feasible before 43 years ago, because Muslims in the world couldn't really give an operating model to the world. But here, with the Islamic Revolution in Iran, Muslims in the world can arguably say mm-hmm. that here's a working model, this is what Islam means, and this is how Islamic philosophy can manage a nation at multiple levels. So I think although Islamophobia is a problem, a challenge, but the hopeful sign is that the stronger that the Islamic Republic of Iran becomes, the Muslims of the world will find it beneficial and in their interest to be able to stand up to the discrimination and marginalization that is taking place of the Muslims in the West. And as you saw recently in India, what mm-hmm. has been happening with this young lady who wasn't able to, the mobs were trying to stop her attending her college or school in Karnataka. So this whole movement of Muslims globally, where they are being marginalized and demonized, the hope for the Muslims globally is that the Islamic Republic of Iran becomes stronger and stronger so that the Muslims can not be seen as dangerous to the West, but at the same time respected, honored, and seen as proper human beings.
Sure. Many thanks, Mr. Shabir Razvi, for your time. He's a political analyst who joined us via Skype and contributed greatly to our program. Many thanks, and you have a very good day, sir. But we're going to remain in London with another gentleman who has kindly given us his time today, and that's no one better than Said Mohsen Abbas, a regular contributor to Press TV, as a journalist and political commentator who comes to you live out of the British capital, Mohsen. Of course, another 22nd of Bahman. We've done this a number of times over the years. What is the significance, I would say, this year? 43 years. And, Mohsen, if you agree, tell the viewers that are watching us this hour and this year, and suppose that they don't know anything about what we discussed last year again over this, what has been the key? What has been the secret that without being an Iranian, in different places in the world, the Iranian revolution inspired many and has its own special fans and supporters?
Well, I think at the heart of what inspires people like myself and others within the world is really that Imam Khomeini said was what he did. What track he set the Islamic Republic on has been steadfastly maintained. And what was that track, and what is it that impresses us most, is that Iran represents for us a hope for a kind of moral order, an ethical, virtuous order in the world, which is being eroded before our very eyes. And since last year, or since the last couple of years that I've been discussing this, obviously on press TV and other places, this has become even more focused. This has become even more acutely obvious to anybody. Any neutral observer will tell you that the moral order of the globe is being steadily, if not rapidly now, being pushed towards a self-destruct of humanity in many ways. We used to say this back in 79 when we were viewing the revolution and were part of that whole kind of that movement for change. And the changes here is encapsulated in three words: new Islamic civilization. This is what Ayatollah Khamenei has been promoting for several years now. It's something which has really captured the imagination of that same generation and others now again. Because what does this mean? Why new? Why Islamic? And why a civilization? Why are these terms being promoted? Well, because the world is in the grips of a neoliberal, consumerist, hyper-capitalist so-called civilization. That's what the world has been packaged and given. And, you know, that has given us now challenges to the human body sovereignty in the West here, the notions of individualism over collective family and community interests. It's given us gender fluidity and confusion around gender issues, which are growing day by day. It's given us a kind of fashionable return of eugenics and depopulation. It's giving us plunder and war and conflict spread in those areas that don't subjugate themselves to the usury and the banking mechanisms. And it's also now giving us surveillance capitalism. We've got, you know, our lives, our very sort of lives are being watched and dictated through all sorts of modern technology. So this erosion of civil liberties, you know, erosion of religious freedom, you know, scientism, the rise of scientism as opposed to science being dominant in terms of what neoliberal Western capitalism or hyper-capitalism is giving the world, needs an alternative, more so than ever before, because you only need to listen to Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum and hear his concepts around the Great Reset. What he really means is more wealth disparity, more control for structural elites, more power for the corrupt levers of power, which want to destroy the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Republic and all it stands for and all it's doing more than anything else in the world. Not China, not Russia, not any of the other powers pose the kind of ideological, moral, cultural threat to that what I call that immoral global movement of the reset than Iran, because Iran has at the heart of it Ayatollah Khamenei and a wise set of leaders who look at things through the prism of a divine spiritual moral order. I'll pause there because I've got so much to say on this that I could probably go on all night. I won't
I'm pretty sure you and I can talk about this for hours. I'm pretty sure, but let's just change gears if you will, Said Mohsen. There's another issue that I'd like to ask you, and I'm pretty sure that it's on many people's minds, you know, the observers of the Islamic Revolution within the past 43 years. I mean, let's face it, it had something to offer. I mean, the Islamic Revolution 43 years ago, it is still going after 43 years. How would you say, Tay Mohsen, it has adapted to what is required of it over the past 43 years? Because, you know, more than four decades' time is not a short time.
Well, I think there have been extreme challenges. The first 10 years of the revolution resulted in a reaction from the Anglo-Zionist powers to launch launched Saddam Hussein into a war, which is termed a sacred defense by the Iranians, of course, and they tried to destroy the revolution through that war. After that, they launched you know, economic sanctions, economic terrorism, in fact, to try and throttle and to kill the revolution. They've launched color revolutions inside Iran. They've encircled Iran through military bases and through trying to take hold of their colleagues like the United Arab Emirates, the Saudis, and all others. They've unleashed ISIS. They've unleashed all sorts of assassination attempts and the destruction of the Iranian technological and scientific and even nuclear advancements. We've seen that. I could go on and on about how much the Anglo-Zionist Empire's paranoia and its absolute commitment to destroying the Islamic Revolution has taken up in terms of the energy and the time of the revolutionaries and the leaders of Iran in itself. Add to that internally, any nation that comes up with a revolution so profound and so large in its kind of goals and so lofty in its kind of ambitions is obviously going to have to take time to build institutions. Now, the institutions that you inherited in the Islamic Republic of Iran, let's face it, would have been the institutions created based on Western knowledge, on Western models. Now, turning around a nation from a completely secular Western model of education, of finances, of medication, etc., and reclaiming many of the traditional values and models of an Islamic civilization. Number one, that is a huge undertaking in itself. You know, how do you turn a nation which has to operate in a global environment from being a neoliberal economy, for instance, to becoming an Islamic economy, a resistance economy, or an economy that is self-sufficient and surviving? Well, Iran has shown that through force or by design, they've started moving towards that. From becoming a economy which only relied on oil and relied on the service of the world through what many would argue is not necessarily a very very environmentally friendly product, they've now become a nation which is rapidly moving towards self-sufficiency, being able to mine their own resources, being able to create their own products, pharmaceutical and otherwise, starting to look at ways of being less reliant on the global neoliberal economic order. So that's one area you can see huge progress. You can see the progress in education. So shifting from a purely secular, I'm not totally against secular education, of course, because you take knowledge, if it's good, from wherever it is. But at the same time, you don't discard the knowledge which is based on spiritual and moral bases which have been built over centuries in Iran, the prophetic knowledge base not being the least of those. So we've seen that the scholars, whatever you say, have inculcated this need for a generation to have a moral, virtuous, spiritual kind of base, because without that, then you're easily going to be bent towards any kind of moral relativism, and that's what the Zionist West is selling, moral relativism. And moral relativism ultimately just confuses society and creates a society which doesn't even know whether it should marry a woman or a man, that doesn't know whether it's okay for children to be men or women. And I won't go into that litany of and that list that I outlined earlier of kind of the ills. And of course, the West hasn't just given us bad things. There are good things. But this is what happens when you have a wise society based on the roots of a divine order. You can then discern, have basira, have insight into what is right and what is wrong for you from abroad. But at the same time, be confident, rely on your own wisdom. You know, the natural remedies, the herbal remedies, for instance, that Iran was very strong at and had shops all around the country at one point in its history, were totally decimated. Why? Because we bought into global big pharma. And we bought into the pill popping generation, and we discarded those herbal remedies as if they had no significance at all. So there, for instance, is one area which Iran needs to look at. You need to look at the balance, I would say, in the next phase. And Imam Khamenei talks about the next phase of the revolution, that the second phase of the revolution has begun. I'd say it's the third, because getting Iran to the state of liberating itself was a huge achievement in the first place, getting rid of the monarchy. But then the next phase was consolidating and defending Iran and earning the right to maintain a new kind of civilization. The third phase is now to build on the platform that you talked about, those 40 years, and to actually have a vision that is singular and goes in a direction that the Iranian people, that Islam, and the wise people within that society wanted to go. And that's not going to be easy, because even more power and even more resources and even more might will be unleashed on Iran to prevent it going that direction. Because when you go that direction, you start giving others hope of mm-hmm. an alternative future, a different from the one that is being brainwashed and pumped into us left, right, and center by media here and West. It's a powerful thing, Hollywood, Bollywood, and all such things. A new culture has to emerge, and this is, I think, what Iran represents. This is what the structural elitists fear, and this is why you are being sanctioned, and why Iran is in that almost pariah status. But it's not, because you have friends. You have the Russians and the Chinese who are still doing business with you, and you have a vision which is moving towards a Eurasian axis rather than relying on the West, which has let down the world so many times.
All right. Much appreciated, Said Mohsen Abbas. I want you to hold the line for me, and I'm going to cross over to our correspondent, Youssef Jalali, who is there for us out there on the Tehran streets, who comes in to fill us in regarding the information. Of course, give us a feel of what it's like to be one of the ralliers today and where he is, basically. Youssef, over to you.
Arash, I'm at the Grand Mausoleum of Imam Khomeini in downtown Tehran, and the rallies came to an end, and now the ralliers are taking part in the Friday prayers. So before the Friday prayers, the Iranian president, Ibrahim Raisi, gave a speech where he thanked the Iranian people for their mass turnout in this year's celebrations of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Of course, the Islamic Revolution, these celebrations mean a lot to the officials of the Islamic Republic, to the authorities of the Islamic Republic. It means they view it as a seal of approval for their legitimacy by the people. So mass turnout is translated into a public mandate for the Islamic establishment. And this year, again, we saw that huge numbers of people took to the streets once again. Some of them were on their motorbikes, some of them were in their cars, and some have come on foot to celebrate the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Still, after 43 years, I talked to several Iranian families, and they told me that they have taken part in the celebrations and the ceremonies to send strong messages to the West. And no matter what the West does, and no matter how much pressure the West imposes on the Iranian nation, they are still here, and they take part in the ceremonies to show their support for the Islamic Republic. So because these people fought for more than a decade in the 1970s and the 1960s to for the revolution to emerge victorious finally in 1979. So they're not willing to give up on their ideals and what they stood for back then. So the Iranian people say that the United States is still trying to deal a blow to the Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution. And their support is a means to, of course, protect the ideals and the and what they stood for back then. They stood for independence and freedom, as is the slogan of the Islamic Revolution. The Islamic Revolution promised to bring about independence and freedom for the Iranian people. And we can see that today Iran is trying to become self-sufficient in a range of areas, including the defense industry and even technology. Iran is trying to stand on its own feet, and that despite the toughest sanctions imposed by the United States against the Islamic Republic of Iran. So the Iranian people still deeply believe in the ideals of the Islamic Revolution. They say that the United States tried to topple the Islamic Republic in 1980 when it supported Saddam Hussein back then in his full-scale war and the longest war of the 20th century imposed against Iran. The United States fully supported logistically and financially supported Saddam Hussein back then, supported Iraq in its war against Iran, and now it's trying to deal a blow to the Islamic Republic using sanctions and the so-called maximum pressure campaign. So these people are here to send all these messages. So every year, it's like a once-in-a-year referendum on the legitimacy of the Islamic establishment. These people are here to send those messages, and at the same time, they're trying to acquaint their children with the Islamic Revolution and who Imam Khomeini, for example, was, and why they stood against the Shah, why they brought about the Islamic Republic. So all of these lessons can be learned by the children, by the new generation in these ceremonies. So this is one of the important messages. These are the students who, the kids who have come along with their families are here to learn about the revolution, are here to learn about the character of Imam Khomeini. And all those messages are learned by different generations who came to these celebrations and were taught about the revolution. So this is a means to, of course, let the revolution to go and be learned by the next generation. So this is one of the messages. So people from all walks of life, and despite the coronavirus restrictions, because the celebrations were supposed to take place in the form of motorbike parades and car parades, but we saw this year a huge number of people have come on foot to mark the victory of the Islamic Revolution. So this means a lot to both for the Islamic Republic and for the Iranian people who are not willing to give up on their ideals, which they stood for around four decades ago.
Many thanks. That's Yusuf Jalali Armen, who has been covering the events of today for us in the Iranian capital. And of course, I'm sure that we're going to get back to him sometime during this live coverage. But for now, I'd like to thank you for that report and get back to our studios and take our viewers to perhaps refresh their minds about the happenings. And we have prepared a report on that. Let's just go back and take a look at that report. And we're going to be back with the live coverage. Stay with Press TV.
The victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979 inspired the oppressed and freedom-seeking people around the globe. Afghans say they received the impacts of the Islamic Revolution in the first place. Addressing the ceremony held in the Afghan capital Kabul, speakers described Iran's Islamic Revolution as a spark of light in the dark world.
Iran's Islamic Revolution awakened the oppressed people, and it was a joyous moment for everyone. Imam Khomeini raised voice for fighting for justice and freedom globally. The Afghan Muslim nation was the first to hear it and follow it. Imam Khomeini taught us that if we get united and follow Islam, we can defeat arrogant powers.
Afghans say resisting invaders and fighting for an Islamic and independent government were among the main lessons they learn from Iran's Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini's school of thought.
By toppling the Pahlavi regime, Imam Khomeini established a powerful Islamic government. Then he directly and indirectly helped Afghans to defeat the Soviet Union and find freedom. Definitely we owe our victory against the invaders to Iran's Islamic Revolution. We wouldn't have defeated the invaders if Shah was in power in Iran.
Separately, Afghan teenagers from different provinces have held a Fajr sports festival to mark the 43rd anniversary of Iran's Islamic Revolution.
We hold such festivals every year on the occasion of the anniversary of the victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Because this event doesn't belong to Iranians only. Muslim teenagers can learn from Imam Khomeini's school of thought.
Iran and Afghanistan besides sharing borders, have many historical, cultural, and ideological values in common. Imam Khomeini, as a Muslim leader, further added to the closeness between the two nations.
As a neighboring and Islamic country, Afghanistan celebrates the victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution every year. Afghans say their resistance against invaders was inspired by Iran's Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini's awakening efforts. Reporting for Press TV, Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
For the 10-day dance, every year Iranians hold celebrations during the period to mark the victory.
1979, after the monarch finally gave it to him.
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. We're continuing with our live coverage of the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Let's just talk a little bit now about the impact of the Islamic Revolution on the wider world, the international impact of the Islamic Revolution. Well, the effects and footprints of the Islamic Revolution are very much visible today in faraway continents such as South America, in the Caribbean, in places like Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia, Nicaragua, and in many countries in Africa. And, for example, in South Africa, where the Islamic Revolution inspired the rise of the South African people, the ANC, and the rise of the South African against the apartheid regime in South Africa. And certainly, this has been another aspect of the Islamic Revolution, the fact that it has left, it has had a very noticeable effect on movements, on peoples all over the world, particularly those seeking freedom and freedom from tyranny, and those seeking justice.
Thank you very much. As you may know, the Iranian nation's struggles against the Pahlavi regime yielded fruit in February 12, 1979, under the leadership of Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon his soul. This unmatched event of the 20th century was actually a beacon of light in the hearts of the world Muslims who had lost hope in salvaging from the clutches of tyranny and colonialism. The Islamic Revolution restored the lost identity of Muslims so that they boasted of being Muslim. Lebanese Shia Muslims considered Imam Khomeini as their leader and built up a strong group called Hezbollah, which had turned into the pain in the neck for the fabricated regime of Israel, and is also going to exterminate this cancerous tumor for good. The Palestinian Sunni brothers, too, loved Imam Khomeini and followed his teachings as the way of liberation of Palestine. The Islamic Iran didn't give up supporting the Palestinian oppressed nation even during the tough conditions of the all-out eight-year imposed war in 1980s. The war ended with the defeat of the superpowers, and the invading Saddam couldn't achieve any of his pre-planned goals of invading Iran. Iran actually turned into a role model for other Islamic nations who seek freedom and justice. While Western-hired political analysts keep prophesizing the Islamic Revolution's imminent collapse, this greatest phenomena of the 20th century continues advancing towards its lofty goals under the leadership of Imam Khomeini's successor, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Imam Khomeini's progressive and freedom-inducing ideas have transcended borders and have captured the hearts and minds even in Washington and London.
Well, this has been certainly here in Tehran. We've seen huge crowds taking part in this year's ceremony, really all over Iran, in all major cities throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran. We've seen huge crowds in Mashhad, in Isfahan, in Bandar Abbas, in Qazvin, in Zanjan, in Shiraz, in all over the Islamic Republic of Iran. All across Iran. And we'll continue
And these marches actually were inside the cars or on motorcycles because of the restrictions regarding the coronavirus pandemic.
That's right. It's time for a short break now. We'll be back.
Epic. Glory. Honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy. See the world through IRIB English Radio, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Okay, we now go live over to Press TV headquarters here in Tehran, where a discussion is in progress with Sayed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator. Let's listen in.
The hook that the Islamic Republic of Iran gives to the oppressed of Yemen and of Venezuela and of the people, even in Pakistan. We all, those of us who know, are looking towards that sustained support, sustained moral leadership.
Many, many thanks. That's Sayed Mohsen Abbas, a journalist and political commentator, one of the regular contributors to our live coverages. Thank you very, very much for that contribution. And thank you very much, viewers, for staying with us and watching this live coverage. Of course, we're not going to finish here, and my good colleague Marzia will take over in a few minutes. Please stay with Press TV.
A spiritual leader who maintained a simple lifestyle. Ayatollah Sayyid Ruhollah Mousavi Khomeini was born in the city of Khomein on September 24, 1902. He grew up in a family with a long tradition of religious scholarship. He received early Quranic education at home and local schools, and pursued his later studies at Islamic seminaries until he became marja, or a source of emulation, a highly prominent authority in religious law. Imam Khomeini soon rose to fame as an anti-imperialism and anti-colonialism icon. He became politically active when, in 1963, the then US-backed monarch of Iran, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, launched a program of reforms known as the White Revolution. The plan was an American-inspired package of measures designed to prop up the regime and nip any voices of dissent in the bud, all in the name of promoting the rights of citizens. Imam Khomeini was the first religious leader who openly condemned the Shah's program of westernization. That opposition led to protests against the monarch. In response, the Pahlavi regime launched a brutal crackdown and arrested Imam Khomeini. His detention resulted in an uprising in June 1963. Demonstrators were confronted by tanks and troops armed to the teeth. Thousands were killed. In November 1964, Imam Khomeini was rearrested and sent into exile, this time because he had opposed the legal immunity the Shah had granted to American military personnel in Iran. He spent over 14 years in exile, mostly in the holy city of Najaf in Iraq. But that didn't stop him from criticizing the Shah for making concessions to Western powers, in his view, a violation of Iranian sovereignty. People from all walks of life listened to his speeches via cassettes and distributed his letters, which became the bedrock of a budding revolution. In the early 1970s, Imam Khomeini gave a series of lectures in Najaf on the establishment of a system based on Islamic values. Those lectures were later published as a book under the title Guardianship of the Islamic Jurists. This was his most famous and influential work. It laid out his ideas on a system of governance that would end dictatorship, establish Sharia, or Islam's divine law, and would fight injustice, corruption, and oppression. Imam Khomeini's courage, charisma, and popularity opened a new chapter in a grassroots resistance against the Pahlavi regime. Ultimately, on the 16th of January, 1979, the Shah fled Iran, and on February the 1st, Imam Khomeini returned from Nofel Le Chateau in France, where he'd been living in exile. 10 days later, Iranians celebrated as their revolution culminated in the overthrow of the US-backed Pahlavi regime. In March 1979, more than 98% of Iranians voted in favor of an Islamic Republic in a referendum. Under such a system proposed by Imam Khomeini, Iran is considered a sovereign country in the form of a republic that implements Islamic laws. A system in marked contrast to the dictatorial Pahlavi regime that was totally dependent on the West, in particular the United States.
And welcome back to Press TV's coverage of the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution right here in Iran. Earlier today, we saw the various rallies being held either from people being in their cars or on motorcycles or actually walking in the traditional manner in commemorating this revolution. Again, more than four decades later after the original victory. I've been talking to some wonderful guests all day today, and I'm happy to announce this panel of guests who are with me either here in the studio or by Skype. Out of Tehran, we have the founder of Al-Qaim Seminary and media activist Mahdi Taib. Out of Brussels, we have journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier, and out of London, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, we'll have Masoud Shajare. I'm thanking all of my guests right now, starting off with Mahdi Taib. Thanks so much for being with us another year. I want to start off with the original slogan of the revolution. What Imam Khomeini chose was, of course, the slogan of Azadi, Istiklal Azadi Jumhuri Islami, independence, freedom, and the Islamic Republic. Explain those, first of all, and tell me how close are we to the original goals of 43 years ago.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Mazia.
Alaykum salam.
The people of Iran at the time of Shah, at the time of the government of Pahlavis, they did not have freedom. They could not express their ideas, their beliefs. The prisons were filled with different groups of activists, not only Muslims, not only Shias. They were there from different sects and groups. At that time, you could see communists, you could see Marxist, you could see Muslims, Sunnis and Shias and Christians, all in prison. Why? Because they had something against the government of Pahlavis at that time. So they did not have a freedom of speech at that time. And as soon as you wanted to express your idea, they would arrest you, they would put you under interrogation, they would put you under the heaviest tortures in their prisons that were made by foreign governments, by the government of Germany and the United States of America. And God knew at that time when that prisoner was going to be freed. Anyhow, so the people of Iran were seeking freedom to be able to express their ideas, to be able to live the way they wanted. So that's what they wanted at that time, and they chanted for freedom. And this is what Imam Khomeini told them. Imam Khomeini told them, look, you don't have freedom. Be aware of the fact that this government has enslaved you, and in order to achieve freedom, you need to raise your voices and stand against this government. The second point was independence. One of the most basic rights of the people of a country and the government of that country is to have independence. The Shah of Iran, when he wanted to choose a prime minister, he did not have the full permission from the so-called superpowers of that time to choose whoever he wants. He had to check it with the United States of America. He had to check it with the Britain. He had to check it with France and some other powers of that time, and namely Israel, to be able to have his prime minister. So that prime minister wouldn't have served the Shah or the people. It would have always served the foreign powers. Therefore, the people of Iran wanted to have independence. And also, let's focus on a fact here, that they wanted to have this independence and also give the people of the world this independence. Meaning that they wanted to have independence for themselves and tell the people of the world, look, you were created free, you are free in this world, and God has given you a free will, so you have to have freedom and independence in your matters, let alone you live in Iran, let alone in other parts of the world. So you have to be able to have independence and practice and exercise independence. So we wanted to be independent. We fought with the government of Shah, which was under the full control of the administration of the United States. And at the end, a system which was the Islamic Republic. The revolution of Imam Khomeini was unlike the other revolutions. Imam Khomeini says it himself, that my revolution, this revolution is not something like other revolutions. Because usually there are different theories. Like one of them, for example, says that a revolution happens because of the conflict between the rights of the lower class, the working class, and the higher class. In Iran, it wasn't such. In Iran, people wanted to practice their ideology. They wanted to be connected to the source of this world, to the divine source of this world, which is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is God. They wanted to have a government which is guidance and permission of God.
Can I just jump in here? Because even that, I mean, we look at in 1979, and of course, because I'm old enough to remember 1979 very well, and looking at the direction that societies were going in at that time, whether we're talking about the communist East or the secular West, it is quite amazing in itself that in the middle of that there was this revolution wanting to adhere to the dictates of God, to Allah's rules and regulations. In the middle of all of this, we can say it was a time that, just do whatever you want to do, just be happy. Mm-hmm. It is amazing in itself that in the middle of that Iran, and with the leadership of Imam Khomeini and people across the board, as you said, rich and poor, from various perspectives, chose that path in itself, isn't it?
Yes, people realize that they need divine leadership. All of these ideologies, all of these schools of thoughts, communism, and all of them, you name them, all of them, they're there to give people satisfaction, to give people freedom, to make them feel happy with their lives, to make them able of enjoying their lives. All right, so they have all given their teachings to the people, but they all have failed. People have realized that they need divine leadership, divine order, a divine teaching that comes from the creator and maker of this world. Imam Khomeini, when he started his movement, he said this movement is a movement of the needy and of the poor of the society under the leadership of God. And on the last night, on the 22nd of Bahman, when he achieved victory, what did he tell his people? When Iran was under total martial law, he said everyone has to go on the roofs and say and chant Allahu Akbar, God is greater. And with saying Allahu Akbar, he achieved victory. He started his revolution with the name of God, and he managed to achieve victory by the name of God, and he continued his path by the name of God, and that's why he said, we are with the oppressed, and we fight with the oppressors.
Okay. Thank you so much. Let me cross over to Brussels now and get our next guest in on this discussion. Elijah Magni, a journalist and political analyst. Again, and welcome to this program. Elijah, you heard our guest here in the studio talking about the different aspects of the revolution. I want to look at the influence of the Islamic Revolution and Islamic Republic on actually when we look at these various movements, independent movement, revolutionary movements, and especially if we look at the resistance axis, the importance of the role that the Islamic Republic plays in that.
Thank you for having me, particularly on this day.
Thank you for coming.
Well, I think the biggest achievement of this revolution is the first referendum that was called upon in March 1979, where people voted for the Islamic Revolution. And the writing of the constitution that fits exactly with your question by supporting the oppressed people around the world, wherever they are. And we see how Iran today and since 1979, particularly in 1981 and 1982, when Israel invaded Lebanon, Iran fulfilled its commitment in the constitution to support the oppressed people around the world and rushed to support the people of Lebanon who wanted to defend their country against the Israeli invasion. Now, that gave a go to the creation of the axis of the resistance that was supported by Iran without imposing its diktat on the population, and going to support population rather than state and government, unless in particular places like in Syria and Iraq and in Venezuela, where the danger was against the whole state, and it was the state that required the support and the armament and the training and also financial support. So what Iran did is not exporting the revolution, because you can't export the revolution unless population in every country are ready to start their own revolution. On the contrary, Iran supported the population to meet their demands and to support them in what they wanted. So we saw in Gaza, for example, in Palestine, when all the Middle Eastern countries used to raise the flag of Palestine, the injustice against this population that was forced to leave their homes and fled the country in 1948 and throughout the decade afterward. Now we see that Iran is the only country in the Middle East, in West Asia, that is financing these Palestinians in Gaza so they can recover their land and their territory without asking in exchange anything or demanding what they should and they should not do.
Well, Elijah, let me just jump in here. You made a point and said that at one point in time, all the Middle Eastern countries were waving the Palestinian flag, and now it's basically Iran who's carrying that banner. What is key? What is the difference? We have seen more and more of these countries in the Middle East and Western Asia actually
basically going towards the Tel Aviv regime as opposed to supporting Palestinians. So what is the difference in your perspective that we see that Iran is leading in that fight against Zionism and supporting the Palestinian people now?
Well, it refers back to what your guest just said about the independence, the freedom, and the denial of domination. And I would add also the ideology. So what Iran did is supported, as it has started by spreading independence and freedom and denied the dominance of the Americans. It also denied the dominance of the Israelis over the Palestinians because they were weak. And we saw throughout the decade how the Middle Eastern countries, particularly the Arab Gulf countries, supported the Palestinians. But then at the end, because in Iran it has an electoral system where there is a freedom of election, a system that doesn't exist in the Gulf country that are all around Iran, and these countries feel threatened by their ruling. Therefore, they need, as President Donald Trump said, they would fall within a week if the Americans don't support them. And while just joking, he said they would speak Farsi in 2 weeks if the Americans don't support them, because the spread of democracy is very easy among the population. So to get the support of the Americans, the Gulf countries seek the support of the Americans and the Israelis. And this is why they brought Israel into their territory that is totally incompatible with the support of the Palestinian cause. Therefore, it was not directed only against the Palestinians, but also against Iran that supported the Palestinian cause. So this is the difference today, where these countries feel extremely fragile and weak with their system that is based on monarchy and inheriting the power from father to son, and is not based on the election of the population of their own rulers. And this is why they dropped the Palestinian cause, which is major and very significant, because the Palestinian cause do not represent only Palestine. The Palestinians represent every single population that is oppressed and that has been denied the basic existence and way of life, and oppressed, killed daily. That can be applied to every single nation around the world. So by Iran moving and supporting and continue to support the Palestinians, notwithstanding their position that was a bit hectic throughout the years, Iran was the first to give the Israeli embassy in Tehran to the PLO and call it the Palestinian embassy. Now that is also major event, a major step to say we support you all the way until you reach where you want to reach. Now the Arab countries are now a burden on the Palestinians. They are a sword on the neck of the Palestinians, not because they don't believe in their cause, but because they want to save their own skin, because they can't rule their country without a foreign support, and that cannot last for very long. And we saw how Iran not only supported the Palestinian cause, but also supported every state who fought against terrorism. And that is also very significant in the mm-hmm. Middle East. Otherwise, we would have seen Iraq, Syria, Lebanon falling in the hand of these terrorist groups that were supported by the Americans, and where the Israelis, by the mouth of their defense minister, said we prefer to have ISIS on our border rather than Assad or Iran or whoever.
Okay, well, Mehdi Taib, you were describing and talking about the original slogan of the revolution and how close Iran has gotten to that. I want to continue on that line and look at the effects of that slogan on regional developments also. I mean, Elijah was just talking about these terrorist elements that we have seen in the region, and we know the role that Iran has played in that. I want you to expand on that from the original goals of the revolution, how close that Iran has gotten to it, and now where does it stand?
Let me say something here, and that is what Netanyahu said, I think, a couple of years ago, three or four years ago, when he was asked, what is the biggest threat for Israel? He said, Iran. And he says it again, do you want me to give you the three threats, the three first threats that are threatening Israel? It's Iran, Iran, Iran. Whoever is supporting the issue of Palestine, whoever is helping the issue of Palestine in any way is under the influence of the Islamic Republic, is under the influence of the revolution of Imam Khomeini. Because once he started this revolution, he said, my first priority is the issue of Palestine. He told the people of the world, until the Palestine is freed, until the Palestine is given back to its own rightful owners, we won't stop. We will raise our voices. We tell the people of the world what's going on in Palestine. We tell the people of the world about the imperialism, Zionism, and corruption and oppression in Palestine taking place by Zionists. And Imam Khomeini revived the issue of Palestine. Well, there were some Arab countries that wanted to support Palestinians in the issue of Palestine, but they all failed, despite all the power and money they had. But Imam Khomeini stood against the government of Shah and its allies, the administration of the United States and their allies in Israel. And at the same time, he said, I'm with Palestinians, and he met with the leaders of resistance in Palestine. So whoever is calling for the issue of Palestine, let them be from different sects and groups and religion and faiths. They're all under the influence of Iran. And Netanyahu doesn't say, I'm afraid of Palestinians who are fighting us next door, who are fighting with us underground here in Palestine. He says, I'm afraid of Iran. And the three threats are Iran, Iran, Iran. Because Iran has been teaching the people of Palestine how to make weapons. Iran has been paying for the lives of Palestinians to be able to survive and fight back. Iran has been making them open their eyes and fight right. And let me say something here, and this is one of the slogans of Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini says, "Inqilab ma infijar an-nur bud." Our revolution was a explosion of light. And you know, and our viewers may know, that in the terminology of religious scholars, explosion of light has a great meaning. Light is used as a metaphor for knowledge. So when Imam Khomeini says that this revolution is an explosion of light, it means that it's going to inform the people of the world of the reality of this world, of the truth, and give them the knowledge. What kind of knowledge? What type of knowledge? A knowledge that will lead them towards opening their eyes and realizing and embracing the reality, what the so-called superpowers are trying to prevent from happening. So that knowledge, that light, that revolution is going to illuminate people's hearts and minds. It's going to take over people's hearts and minds. Therefore, when Imam Khomeini started his movement, they boycotted him and censored his pictures in the U.S., thinking that if they don't show, if they show angry faces of him, that was a policy, to show angry faces of Imam Khomeini, people won't support him, won't follow him. Imam Khomeini's revolution has gone all the way to different countries. We have people supporting and following the revolution of Imam Khomeini in the United States of America, in France, in the heart of imperialism and Zionism in Israel. There are Palestinians who don't support the ideology of Imam Khomeini as a Shia scholar, yet they support his ideology as a fighter for freedom, as a fighter against oppressors. So you see the recent fight between Palestinians and Israel. It took about 11 days, I think, right?
Right.
Once the Palestinians achieved victory, once they gathered in Beit al-Maqdis to celebrate, they were chanting the slogans of Shias, of Imam Khomeini's, Haydar, Haydar, Ya Sahyun. meaning that we're the followers of this guy, of Imam Khomeini, who was a follower of Haider. Although they're not followers of Haider themselves, but they're following the ideology, the doctrine of Imam Khomeini, and they're receiving support from the revolution of Imam Khomeini. So if you look at what Imam Khomeini did, this revolution, which was an explosion of light, one of the things that Imam Khomeini started from the beginning was to educate the people of Iran and to push them towards science. If you want to become powerful, if you want to have independence and freedom, you have to have knowledge. And therefore, you have to educate yourself. And if you look at the achievements of the Islamic Revolution throughout these last 40 years, you see that the achievements that the Islamic Republic has achieved is incomparable with any country in this region. In this region. If we have time, I can go over some of the numbers and some of the statistics that the reliable sources, Western sources, have given out.
Well, we'll come back. I'll come back, definitely. I'd like to hear that. But let me cross back over to Brussels and throw a final question Elijah's way.